Welcome to the Reimagine podcast, where we explore the philosophy of photography. I'm Ewan Bell. This podcast is inspired by my book, Reimagine, and each episode we walk through one chapter and the ideas it contains. Most of those chapters have evolved from topics that come up during a photo tour and then get turned into an article for my website. A version of this conversation happens on every photo tour. The idea within is powerful and can really transform your capability to photograph people. After my book was published, I released a copy of this chapter on my website, and it became the single most shared article I've ever posted. I also edited a version for Digital Photographer in the UK, and it became their careers feature for that month. It's proven to be one of the best things I've ever written. But who reads websites these days, right? So today, with the help of David, we're going to talk through the philosophy behind why we ask first. This particular chapter, Why We Ask First, it's all about asking permission from people when you're traveling somewhere and you see someone interesting and you want to take their portrait. It's actually all about permission and the path that that leads you on. We're talking about portraiture. What does a portrait mean to a traveller? Which is really different to bringing someone into the studio and saying, I want a portrait of this person. So it's more of a travel context. It kind of kicks off with this idea of if someone's basically stalking rather than being up close and taking a portrait.
For me, in this chapter, getting permission from a subject is so important because, and it's something I've practiced a long time myself, I've practiced both the stalking and getting permission, and I always find that the getting permission always leads to a better photograph. Yes, you might, in the stalking sense, get some interesting photos, but when you connect with these people, you really truly do create this wonderful connection that always comes out in the photograph, always. If you spend that time with them, get the permission, spend time and work that scene, let them relax, know that the camera is nothing to be scared of, that it's just really you, that for me always gets a better photograph. Even if they're not looking at the camera, that you always do get a better image.
All of my techniques come from the idea that you don't necessarily want to put yourself out there and talk to strangers and things like that. How does that change your photography? And I've got a chapter just on that alone. But today we're talking about the idea of permission. And while shyness is one aspect, simply taking your time is really what it comes down to. Mm. If you go slow and you give yourself time and you let yourself have an opportunity to have an experience with these people.
Oh, that is so true, because it's one thing as a shy person to actually go up and ask. That's a big, big thing to do, to go and get permission from somebody. But that is really the foundation of actually getting a better image. When you spend that time, and not just 1 minute with them, if you spend time with them and talk with them, show them the images that you may have already taken of them, but just build a rapport and allow them to be who they are, really does bring out the best in them and your photography, because you're building that connection. And yes, you might be in a marketplace for a short period of time, but importantly, spending time with that person or even that small group of people will always bring out a better image. I can't believe how I expected early in my photography to just stalk people and hope for a good image. Yeah, there are occasionally ones I thought, oh, that's interesting, but they're never as good as the ones where you've actually spent the time to get to know people.
One of the things that I hear a lot on the workshops and tours I run is that people say, well, I'm going to miss the moment if I were to step into it and talk to them, and they're worried they're going to miss. And so they want to stand back with a 200mm lens and basically grab shots of someone they don't know and haven't talked to, which, if you're a middle-aged guy, it's a little bit creepy for anyone to be pointing that lens at them in that kind of context. But also, I would argue there was no moment. You didn't have a moment at all. That subject certainly wasn't having any kind of moment with you. And that lack of connection is what comes through. Aside from the difference between a telephoto and a wide-angle lens in terms of what you're capturing, and we'll get onto that for sure. But this idea that you're going to miss the moment, I don't buy, because I don't think you had one to begin with. And that I think that by stepping in and having a connection and taking that time to understand your subject leads to some genuine moments that you are now in a position to capture. You now have an opportunity to get their permission. And of course, you can't always speak the language, and sometimes, you know, you're pointing at your camera and you show them the picture on the back of the camera. What I find is once you've got that permission and you've had a little bit of an exchange there, people just go back to doing what they're doing. They go back to being themselves, and that's when you get the shots that are really, really beautiful.
Yes. Because they've opened up. They've accepted you're there. And you might have exchanged a few photos to begin with, and that's great to break the ice. But when they've opened up like that and they've settled back, their nerves have settled down because, you know, you're not that creepy person anymore. You know, you've built that connection with your smile. You may not have speak the language. That's fine, because the smile and just holding your camera up is such a universal language. They give you that permission. They do relax. They're not anxious as much anymore. It might take a few more minutes for that to settle down. It might take 10 minutes for that to settle down. But once it does, and they're back into their way of life, whether they're making an eye contact with you or not, it just makes for much better photos and a much better experience for you as a photographer, because then you can go away and say, wow, I had a wonderful moment with these people. And I think that's really the best part of the photography. Going away as a sniper photographer is not really that satisfying. Building those connections with people is always the most important thing. You know, I go back to in the studio, you've got to still spend time. The first 30 minutes is not, you know, for me, I need to spend time, warm up, so to speak, get the model to warm up. But once they're warmed up, you know, the things that happen are great. The last 30 minutes are always the best 30 minutes, because that's when, you know, they've had the best opportunity to be themselves.
I think also you need to give yourself a chance to warm up.
Ooh.
You know, there are often days when I go out to shoot and I think, I don't want to do this today. I don't want to put myself in front of some people, because I have to work at it. Got to pull myself out of the turtle shell and go and talk to people. And there are days I think, actually, nah, I'm just not going to do this. But I know that the key to doing it, even if you are reluctant, is just to do it slowly and to give yourself time. I've often sat in a market, and I'll just take one of my travellers who's struggling, and we'll just basically sit down on a curb and we'll just watch all the chaos going on. And we start to get a sense of the rhythm of the place. We start to understand that actually the lady with the bananas has got a bit of a beef with the lady with the eggplant. They're not getting along. One of them's smiling and one of them's not. And so we go talk to the smiling lady. We don't talk to the lady who's not smiling. That's not a good start to trying to take someone's portrait. If they're not smiling, try someone else. Which also, lots of people don't smile when they're trying to take someone's portrait. We're not conscious of it. We don't always walk around with a big happy face. You probably do. You're kind of a happy person. But most of us are a little bit confronting, actually, with our resting face. It's not always all that welcoming, you know? And so we're walking up to people often with a lens in front of our face or right there. And the first thing people are seeing is our lens, not even our face. And even then, we're not smiling.
Yeah.
That's not a very welcoming way. And just to make that conscious step when I'm going up to a complete stranger and I'm thinking about asking them to take their photo, and I have the camera down to one side so that's not even part of the scene.
It's not about the scene, yeah.
And I throw them a smile and I see if they throw a smile back first. If they don't, I'm going to find someone else to try to take a portrait of, because that's not the right person. And then the camera comes into it, and then you show them some pictures, which aren't the ones that you actually want to keep. You're just trying to show them what you're doing. Yeah. And that you take time to build into some kind of connection with or without the language. Just a quick word to plug my book, which this podcast is based on, and my photography tours. I run a handful of extremely bespoke adventures every year, and they really are the best of their kind. I care about my travellers, and I work hard to give you the best opportunity and the best experience. Go to ewanbell.com and take a look. Here's a thought. It's very different taking photos, say, in a marketplace in China than it is in a country where people can basically turn around and say, hey, why are you taking my photo? It's a very different experience. Do you do any work with strangers here in the city?
Yes, I do. I'll give a great example. About 12 months ago, the Thai community of some university students from a Thai community were having a beauty pageant, and all the girls had been dressed up, they had their hair done, they had such an entourage of people, and I was just so absorbed by these girls. It was just fascinating, and their entourage, because they were just as involved. And but the moment I walked up to the first girl, I said, oh, you know, you girls are looking so beautiful today, you know, the smiles on their faces were a delight. But the moment I did that, they were just so delighted that, you know, this white guy was so intrigued by them. And because I got the permission to take their photographs, I got some beautiful photos, absolutely beautiful. And the light wasn't the greatest, but, you know, I made what the best I could out of it. They had their hats on, they had their sashes on. It was just a lovely afternoon. It was really good.
When you're taking a portrait of someone, it's also reflecting your connection with that subject. The photographer is actually present within that space. Mm. Even though you don't appear in the frame, the photographer is present. The camera looks both ways, particularly if you're trying to achieve more of a fly on the wall kind of a scene. You know, once you've got that permission, once people can then just sort of go back to doing what they're doing. Yeah. And now you have both permission, you have intimacy, and when they get to that stage that they simply ignore that you're there, that's the best point.
What I particularly enjoy about getting that permission is that the more you engage, which is actually quoting from you, the more you engage, the less you have to fear, they have to fear from you. Which I thought was a great point, because once you're a friend with somebody, yes, there is no longer any fear. One of the things that you're mentioning is about what's going to happen to these images, and from my camera club level, where do these photos go, and how do you tell those people what the photos are going to be for? Is actually a difficult subject. But I often tell them that I'm from a camera club, and photos may be used in competition. They might not be. They might just be from my personal catalogue of photos. And where they go, it is hard. But I find that if I'm upfront with that, then that's usually enough for people to say yes. And to engage and to be part of, you know, what's about to happen. So that's good.
We talk about getting permission. The problem is, not everyone can understand what you're going to do with the photos. So it's one thing to ask, can I take your photo? It's another thing to ask, can I put your face on the cover of National Geographic? And there's no way that you can properly convey to a subject, oh, here's what I'm going to do with the photo. Partly because you don't know what you're going to do with the photo. You don't always know the end result of that. To the point that I feel that getting people to sign some sort of talent release is generally meaningless unless they understand exactly what you're doing. When I'm doing a shoot for National Geographic, it's much more organized, it's more constrained. It's like things aren't happening by chance as a general rule. You know, you're planning out your trip, you're planning out your content, your subject. And in that context, you're walking up to someone and saying, I want to take your photo, I'm going to put it in this particular magazine. So it makes sense. You can tell an Australian person that context and they will understand. Now, if you're in China in a market and, you know, the banana lady's having a crack at the eggplant lady, neither of those, and it's not just because my Mandarin's not that great, but neither of those ladies are going to understand what National Geographic is necessarily, what a publication is. They're not going to understand the consequences of giving permission. And that's why I think in that context a talent release doesn't mean much. I want to spend a little moment talking about your choice of lens in this kind of context, because you touch on this idea that you don't just want to shoot the person, you want to bring in some context that has to do with their life. The banana lady who's having a go at the eggplant lady, if you don't show the bananas, you don't know she's a banana lady, she's just a lady. All right, so that if you have that context, and usually for me it's like the lady cooking up the noodles, you know, at the market, and they're my favourite because the noodles are good. And it's that context, that bringing in context. And often when we talk about a zoom lens, people assume we're talking about a telephoto zoom, but you can have a wide-angle zoom. And so a 16 to 35 mil lens for me is a much better lens for taking portraits of people in a market than a 70 to 200. I don't know why anyone would walk around with a 70 to 200, because you're losing all of the story. You're losing their lives. You're just getting pieces, tiny, useless pieces. I love to shoot with a 24mm prime. That's the lens that I do so much of my work with. Mm. And it's because I can drop it down to f2 and I can pull out that subject, and that subject becomes quite literally the focus of the shot. They become the hero of the shot, but I still get that sense of where they are. Even if the bananas are in the background and out of focus, I still know that they're there. I still get the rest of the story. And that's what a wide lens gives me that a telephoto doesn't.
I'm going to ask you a question, Ewan, because so many people that I know struggle with the concept of using a wide-angle lens. They just think that a wide-angle lens is for broad landscapes. So they don't actually know how to use a wide-angle lens in, say, a market environment. They don't appreciate what that can actually bring them. So when you're using that wide-angle lens, you are getting a lot of the scene. You're probably getting even more than you actually particularly want. Are you cropping those images down?
If you're just going to crop, it's no longer a wide-angle lens, okay? So that doesn't help me at all. And also it's important to distinguish between wide and ultra-wide. We're talking about the difference between 24 and 16. Gets a little hard shooting portraits at 16 mil. It's much easier to get some sort of perspective distortion that maybe is going to throw your composition. That said, it's not out of the question. Certainly plenty you can still do with 16 mil. In fact, one of my favourite trips I've done was when I took the Sigma 20 mil 1.4 lens to Bhutan. Often I'll take gear to review when I do a tour, and also it helps me to see a trip from a different kind of perspective. Usually I would have a 24 mil in the kit, I'd have a 50 mil, and that's pretty much everything I need for most trips. I don't usually need some kind of telephoto because my best shots are going to be when I'm closer anyway. But this time I had a 20 mil. So it's wider than a 24, but I can still get down to f1.4, which means if you're inside a temple where the light's low, you've got that little bit of extra speed to work with, but also that little bit of extra width and that wider perspective. this was a prime. It's like, I'm either going to be on the 20 or I'm going to be on the 50. Those are my only choices. I love having a simplified choice. If you sit there with a zoom, you think, where in the zoom should I be? And you're not actually taking shots. When I've got a 20 mil on, that's the lens I'm going to be taking shots with. I don't have to think about the lens. I just think, okay, how can I make it work? Mm. And I've got so many beautiful shots from that trip. I mean, they're still actually some of the best shots I've ever taken in Bhutan. We just had a really fantastic festival where no other tourists turned up. It was just us. That doesn't happen often in Bhutan. And so, you know, we plan to go back to that festival from time to time. To get back to your question, how do you shoot a portrait with a wide lens? And the thing is, you've just got to get closer. You stand closer, and it's not about trying to fill the frame with someone's head and shoulders. That's not a portrait. You want to step back and let some of that scene actually come in. So if you've got a portrait of someone, of like a monk who's in a dressing room getting prepared to go out for the festival, and you've got this light coming in through the window at the back, and that someone's helping them to put on this mask, this beautiful 100-year-old mask that they've been dancing with, you know, for the last century. All that story is captured, and it's clearly about that person. It's about the monk. They're the hero of the shot. So the wider the lens you have, the more of that story you can pull in, but you've got to be close. You know, you can't just stand back 50 feet. That's no longer a portrait, that's a landscape now. So you can be right in there with your subject, right in the middle of it. And that's where the wide angle gives you the opportunity to do it, but you won't know that unless you try it out.
I think you've hit it right on the head. You've got to be closer. And that's where people quite often fall down. They're just not close enough to the image to capture the details, yet still have the area around them, the environment that's really important to actually help tell a story. So people do need to practice and be patient when they are trying to capture these sort of images. And working a lens takes time to learn how to use it.
Talked a lot about portrait techniques in this podcast. The fact is, we don't have to get every shot. It's okay if sometimes we don't get the portrait. It's easy to forget that in our enthusiasm. We also forget that sometimes our actions have an impact on other people, whether we realize it or not. In Kathmandu, I met a monk while waiting for the dawn light. I was taking a photo of a sign outside a chai shop, thinking the building was empty. From inside the shadows, I heard a voice saying, "Don't take my photo." Only when the monk stepped forward did I realise he was there, so we sat and talked. The monk told me about all the ways foreigners try to sneak his photo, as though he couldn't tell what they were doing, but he knew, and it made him sad. He said to me that if these tourists would just ask him, he would gladly let them take a photo, but they never ask, they just take, and that's why we ask first. Huge thank you to David Norris for being with us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please give it a thumbs up. You can also find out more about the Reimagined book, my photo tours and workshops at ewanbell.com. David will be joining me on the next trip to Nepal in 2020 and then again in Bhutan in 2021. The music for this podcast is by Robert Valenti. Have a good day.